Hey, America.
Start listening now. Nice.
Sure.
It's getting better and better. So this week, the entirety of the show is going to be about Eric, whose hair was being taken care of so poorly that the government stepped in relocated it to my beard.
Yep, I got a haircut, and it was all put onto Danny's face.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the rest was given to Guy Fieri, and I was not allowed to ask any follow-up questions.
Mm-mm. The only two recipients.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, because we've signed an NDA, Derek, just roll the music.
And welcome to another secretive episode of 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, the country that you can't wait to leave. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
I'm Danny.
Yeah.
So get me out of here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Supposing there were no travel restrictions and you just had to relocate, where would you go?
Oh, New Zealand.
New Zealand? Okay.
Yeah. Ireland, maybe Scotland. Well, let's get Brexit figured out completely first, and then I'll maybe hop over to Scotland. But for now, Ireland.
When's New Zealand going to get into Eurovision?
I don't know. I think maybe they'll just, like, shove Kimbra into the Australian national final and see if anybody notices.
I can see that happening.
Derek, where would you go?
Norway.
Yeah.
That's one of the ones I looked at.
Yeah. I was thinking either Ireland or possibly Denmark. People seem just very happy in Denmark. Plus Legos, so...
Lego.
Fanny toxic.
Did you put an S on the end of that?
I do. I am aware that the plural of Lego is Lego. He meant
Lagos, the former capital of Nigeria.
Of course.
Yeah, something like that. It sounds weird to me. I'm sticking with Legos. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I have to go with the Midwestern mom voice that just says, pick up your Legos. So that's it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Sam, tell them how they can keep track of us as we relocate to various liberal democracies across the globe.
I could hit us up on Facebook or Twitter at 12pointsUSA. You could email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. Scope out our website directly at 12pointsfromamerica.com. Or if you want to support us in any way, like I said, we don't have a coffee account or a Patreon or anything like that, but you could hit us up on our Redbubble to get all sorts of sweet, sweet merch. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Everyone know that you are a composer or that you keep the rhythm inside and maybe something else. You never know when I'll get a really stupid idea and feel that I need to immediately put it on the Redbubble site.
Uh-huh.
It could happen at literally any time.
Lightning could strike and you could end up with a t-shirt.
That's right.
That tends to be a theme with our friendships, doesn't it, though? I mean, between our podcast Redbubble and our penchant for TKO whenever
we get struck by lightning a lot.
Oh, yeah, that too.
I was going to say, that's how all of our relationships, we monetize them through Redbubble?
That's correct.
That's the only reason I'm friends with you guys, really, let's be honest.
Because we're lucrative.
Yep. Wait, what? Okay, so, got a little bit of news going on.
We have a little bit of news, yes.
Wee bit. Just a twinge of news. We have a little bit of updates from the EBU. We have confirmation that the presenters from 2020 will stay the same for next year. We have confirmation that the logo from 2020 will be brought forward to 2021, possibly with some minor.
Really? Open up?
Open up will still be there. It'll probably be even more. Yep.
It'll be open up, but in the middle of that circle, there'll be a couple of shifty eyes.
I mean, the thing about the logo is that every little slice of that pie represents the country. So if we have any countries leave or any countries come back next year, that could be subject to change. But generally speaking, that's more or less what the logo for next year will look like. But more importantly, we have a little bit more information on what the contest could be like in, depending on what COVID is doing to us at this time next year, or not even this time next year, this time in May, for crap's sake. Oh. So they basically have a four-pronged approach to this. One is, if everything goes completely as normal, there's a vaccine in place, everybody's healthy, everything's okay, big pipe dream. The shows will be all from the Ahoy. Participants will be on site in the Netherlands. Audience will be in the arena. There'll be events. There'll be the press center. All the stuff that we've come to know and love over the last, how many dozens of years. If things are a little bit more tightened up, they have a B option, sort of a 1.5 meter option, where they'll still have the show. Yep. Participants will still be in the Netherlands. There will probably be a more socially distanced audience within the arena. Scaled back events in Rotterdam. Scaled back press center. If there are travel restrictions, they may offer the option that some participants might be able to participate from their home studios, like what they're doing in Poland for Junior Eurovision. Again, even more restricted audience, fewer events in Rotterdam proper, and probably an even more scaled back press center. And in the case of a full-on lockdown, it'll probably look a lot more like what we're seeing at Junior this year. Well, there will be shows from the Ahoy. The hosts will be there. There'll probably be some sort of interval act. Voting will take place from the Ahoy, but all the participants will sing from studios in their home countries. No audience in the arena, no real events in Rotterdam, and probably not much of a press center, maybe some sort of virtual link up to press conferences or something like that. But it looks like the EBU and Avritros have been thinking about this. So the fact that they're being so open about this at this stage of the game is, it's kind of heartening to see that they're thinking about it. So we'll see what happens. There's still a lot that can go on between now and May.
Trying to be optimistic, but option one is probably not going to happen.
Agreed.
Yeah. That option. Seems, you know, barring a scientific breakthrough in relatively short order, it just doesn't seem, it seems tough.
Yeah.
But
at the same time, I have more faith in Europe than I do in my country.
Well, then that also brings up the question, will they even allow us in?
No.
No. So, no.
So relocate to the maritime provinces, get your passport.
So I just made myself sad. So
Netherlands, I will quarantine in a concrete box if you let me in for 3 weeks before the show.
Yep.
Just, you know,
give me like one outlet and Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Drill a hole in the box so you can shove some stroopwafels in there every once in a while. Maybe a herring.
Well, if they turn the stroopwafels sideways, they can just put a slot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pour some Chocomel in there.
Chocomel will make it work. Slot.
I'm so sad. I never had Chocomel, and I was thinking about it all year.
COVID.
I love you, Prince Choco Prince.
To be fair, Prince Choco Prince is Belgian, not Dutch.
That's right. Yes.
It's
nevertheless, we love him dearly.
You had Prince Choco Prince, but my random Belgian food mascot that I saw when I was over there, granted it was just like in the train station as I was transferring from Paris to Amsterdam, there was some sort of bakery and they had an anthropomorphic apple pie named Lord Applecake.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man.
And he had a monocle and a top hat and everything. And I mean, this is probably, you know, 15 years ago, but I'm kicking myself that I did not avail myself of the pleasures of Lord Applecake.
Danny, you're misremembering that there is no monocle. That's a common misconception.
I see.
Oh, I Mandela effect myself with Lord Applecake.
Danny, we met Fair Prince Choco Prince at a train station as well, didn't we? That was in
Bruges. Yeah, we did. Yeah, that was when we were waiting for the train back to Brussels.
I miss him.
I miss the old grannies using a VR headset that would come on to the rotating slides on the monitors in the train station every 2 minutes. Anyway, we have notifications from Fred?
Yes. And he got eliminated.
That's what the explosion sound effect was for. Yeah. What round did he last till?
Third dance, but second eliminated.
That sounds right.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, what, you know, was he going to do the foxtrot? Was he going to do the striptease? Couldn't have made it.
Ooh.
He's a fit guy.
He is a fit guy, you know.
All that yoinking.
I think he did a Viennese waltz the first time around. I think his second one was a samba.
Oh,
and
man.
Then his final dance was a tango.
Ooh.
To a song.
I gotta go out
Matrix.
On a tango. Good.
Yep. A Matrix-themed tango, nonetheless.
What?
Thanks. Who was he? Was he Trinity?
Can I take the blue pill and just forget about all this?
No.
Was it the blue pill or the red? I don't know.
We don't know.
I think the blue pill is the one where you
go to sleep.
Is bliss. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
That's why red pill Reddit is the red wing nut job one.
Yike. Well, we can move on to the rest of the eliminations or survivors from the rest of the Eurovision veterans in the reality sphere.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not watching Dancing with the Stars or Shall We Dance or whatever it is, a lot of people are really getting sucked into The Masked Singer in its various iterations all over the world. And we just got word that Polly Genova, the beloved Miss Polly, she was the first act knocked out of The Masked Singer in Bulgaria this year.
What an honor.
I know. I mean, granted, supposedly she wasn't using her voice. She was kind of like doing sort of a mock voice and wasn't really singing as herself. But yeah, supposedly she was singing as a pair of eyes looking over a hedge.
Like the Great Gatsby?
Kinda. Only
or Wilson not... from Home Improvement.
There you go.
That was Polly Geneva.
Yeah, that was Polly Geneva.
What are you doing?
Offering sagely advice.
I mean, Polly's not the first crossover from Eurovision, not even in Bulgaria. Last year, Jana Bergendorf from Equinox came in second place. She was dressed up as a rose. Over in Australia, Kate Miller-Heidke just came in second place from The Masked Singer over there, dressed as the queen, beating out Isaiah Firebrace, who was dressed as a wizard. So yeah, they get Kate Miller-Heidke and Polly Geneva. We get Sarah Palin.
Yeah. We also do get, like, good singers.
True.
We also do.
We knock them out way too early. Shaka Khan, the hell?
Yeah, we had Shaka Khan.
And they knocked her out, like, in round one. Like,
didn't we also have, like, Patti LaBelle at some point, too?
Oh, yeah.
Patti LaBelle.
Yeah.
Dionne Warwick was on this past season. She got knocked out pretty early.
Seal made it pretty far.
Yes. Seal, as the leopard, which I thought was
absurd that, like, and I feel like the judges had to have been playing dumb, because he was just singing with his normal voice, and, like, they had to pretend for whatever number of weeks that they didn't know that was very obviously Seal.
Right.
I don't know.
I know.
It was so clear.
They could have just been, if only, you know, if only they'd been like, hey, can you sing Batman for us? Just like, say the word Batman for us.
Batman.
That's it. That's Seal. I got it. Yep. It's Seal. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. We did have a Eurovision again.
We did.
Again.
I unfortunately didn't catch it this week.
You can still watch it. You can still watch it. It is on YouTube for the next couple of whiles. I think about a week or so, I think. But yeah, it was a good one. 2005. Eric, it was your first time watching that one in full, right?
That is correct. Yes, I had not seen this one. It was wild. I had a few takeaways. One is that they were still riding the every way that I can wave, because there were at least 50% of the field was ethnobobs.
Oh yeah,
like a varying quality. Obviously, the winner was one, which was my number one. The other thing was drums.
So many drums.
There were so many drums on stage for like almost every song.
I feel like that was a big thing in the late 2000s, especially. Like, and it was such a phenomenon that it feels like that's specifically what they are talking about in Love, Love, Peace, Peace.
That is like
is this
like,
specific era.
But yes, somewhere a young Emily DeForest was like, well, I know what I'm doing. And then she ended up doing very well. There are a few songs I greatly enjoyed. We have to mention the debut of Moldova.
Mm-hmm.
This song is absolutely nuts. It was like a mix of Red Hot Chili Peppers and like ska music and Moldovan flair. It was amazing.
Yeah, so for those who don't know the song that we're talking about, it's Zobshi Stub with Bunika Batedova, Grandma Beats the Drum. Derek, can we just play like a little clip of this? Like for those of you, those poor souls who didn't see the actual clip of this, like musically, it's still amaze.
I'm excited. Let's see.
One, roll two, out. Three, four. Let's kick it, we wanna dance now. We are turning into hammer sticking with them all. Wow.
All right, so Danny, you just watched that song for the very first time. Initial thoughts?
It's not the worst song. I could have been persuaded to like it. It is very, Sam's gonna hate me, it's very Eurovision.
I hate you.
It is that specific brand of Eurovision from, I'll say, before 2013.
Well, this is 2005, so I mean, yeah, that checks that box.
Mm-hmm. So that's literally true.
It does. Really not bad.
Yeah, but like you could see like Moldova entering the scene and doing this well, and you just knowing that this is a country that you're gonna have to keep your eye on, because they're gonna go weird. They're going to bring grandma. They're going to bring ethno-ska?
Yeah, ethno-ska.
Ethno-ska, yeah. We need more ethno-ska in Eurovision. We need more rock music in Eurovision, generally speaking, I think.
Yes.
Speaking of which, honestly, my favorite song from 2005, in like just like single playthrough, no time to ruminate on a whole lot, these fellas known as Wigwam.
Oh, what? Surprise, surprise. Eric loving the Norwegian song.
Hey, you know what? You know what? Whatever. But these guys walking on stage looking very much like just a cheap ripoff of Motley Crue or Poison or something like that, except they're way better than that. That dude's live vocals were unreal. Like, that dude could belt.
Can we play just like a quick clip?
Yes, we can.
All right.
Sure, quick, play a clip of Norwegian Motley Crue, which is ironically spelled with fewer umlauts.
Oh yeah. I don't know if I'm relieved or disappointed that the camera work didn't focus on the bulge, because there was some bulgitude going on that one.
There is bulgitry.
Yes. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, 2005 was a fun year. Sort of the heart of that ethnopop. A lot of what people imagine Eurovision is kind of came from that 2003, 2004, 2005 era. But it was also a really interesting one politically, in the fact that it was held in Ukraine right at the tail end of the Orange Revolution. So you saw a lot of orange being waved in the audience, and it wasn't from the Dutch. Viktor Yushchenko, the president at the time, presented a trophy to the winning act, Greece. And he had just come off of his dioxin poisoning.
I was going to say, off of his mysterious umbrella prick.
Yes, exactly. So I'm like, okay, you're alive. You're presenting this award. The song that Ukraine actually had as their hometown entry was basically the unofficial anthem of the Orange Revolution. The song kind of translates to, you know, basically it's a takeoff of the old Chilean, El pueblo unido jamás será vencido, the people united will never be divided, that kind of a thing, only in Ukrainian. And the original version of the song actually was name-checking Yushchenko. They couldn't obviously have that in the Eurovision version, but it was like, yes, Yushchenko. So it was a very, very interesting time. And I can't even imagine what it was like to be on the ground in Kiev that time. Derek and I were in Kiev in, that would have been 2017, which was an already super interesting time to be in that city. And honestly, watching all those postcards really, really made me miss Kiev. But I can't even imagine what it would have been like being there right after the revolution. Derek, do you have any favorite memories of Kiev?
The food.
Other than the cheap food.
The food was so good.
It really was.
Just how nice everybody was. I kind of thought the Eastern European former Soviet state would be a little bit gruffer.
More austere.
Yeah, and everyone seemed super friendly.
Yeah, I got that vibe too. Yeah, we were staying in a hotel right off of Maidan. Not off of Maidan, it was like on Maidan. And the feeling that I got in Kiev was a sense of sort of defiant joy that there, you know, there was a war going on a couple hundred miles away. And the sense of, we have no idea what the hell's going to happen tomorrow. So in the meantime, we are going to drink the best vodka that we can, or horilka, get our fill of food and be outside listening to music and playing with the kids in the public square. And it just enjoy life while you can. So I really, really loved Kiev. I was shocked at how much I loved Ukraine.
I'd go back.
Absolutely. I don't think the EBU wants to go back quite yet, but I would.
That's not their choice.
Mm-hmm. They keep sending good songs. We'll go back soon.
Speaking of Eurovision again, Rob Holly, friend of the show, the guy who puts together Eurovision again, has a puppy.
Pupper.
And did you see what he named said puppy?
I did.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Guess.
Is it Jan Ulasan?
No. Oh, it's that would be good.
Wouldn't that be? Isn't that a great puppy name?
That is. It's great.
Come, Jan.
Love any puppy name that requires 5 minutes of explanation. No, it's Fuego.
Oh!
So,
it is a, I'm not good with dog breeds.
So it's a whippet.
Whippet, that's right. Yeah.
Whippet, good. So shout out to Fuego, the whippet, friend of the show.
We have a note here that says that 2005's Eurovision also had so much Klitschko.
Yeah. In addition to the president, they brought the Klitschko brothers out for the last like 30 to 45 minutes.
Who are the Klitschko brothers?
Who are the Klitschko brothers? Don't ask that out loud too loudly, or else you get punched in the face.
Oh, I see. Are they like MMA fighters?
No, they're boxers, traditional boxers.
Oh, I see.
Heavyweight boxers.
Yeah. Traditional boxers.
And one of them, I forget which, is the mayor of Kiev now?
Vitaly, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
You think they switch it up, and then sometimes Vladimir's like, yeah, I can be mayor for a day. You go, you know, take a nap or whatever.
Ah, the benefit of having a twin.
Yeah.
I don't think they're actually twins. I think their faces just got punched in such a way that they look more alike than they probably did originally.
They're very doughy. Unless you're listening, in which case you look great. No, no dough at all.
You can reach Eric at...
Shout out to the Klitschko's friends of the show, mark.
Please be our friends. Don't hurt us. We love your city.
And if you do come here to kick my ass, that's fine. Just please bring me back with you and kick my ass there. And then, you know, I don't know what healthcare is like in Ukraine, but it can't be that much worse than here. Another thing funny thing happened on the way to Eurovision again. Actually, it was wrapping up. We had I had kind of a weird thing happen. We had talked in the last show about how my number one was what we believed was the second lowest in second least dominant winner of all time in terms of the percentage of points it could have gotten.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So what was the mistake you made?
So I made a mistake. We messed this wrong. Our pal Edmund, who follows us on Twitter and listens to the show. Shout out to Edmund. An actual friend of the show.
Woo,
unlike the lousy Klitschko brothers. The true Klitschko brother, Edmund Klitschko, pointed out that my numbers were off. And what I had messed up was that when factoring in the number of points they could have possibly scored, I was not subtracting the points that the countries could not award to themselves.
Ah.
Oh, okay.
That's not the biggest problem. No, it's not. But I have to issue a number of corrections here.
Okay.
And this actually does change a number of things when factoring in.
Satellite is no longer dominant winner.
Satellite was never a dominant winner.
Undominant, though?
It's never that bad.
Satellite, I think, is still
a big old
not
shrug.
Great.
I still like it. Shut up.
So we're going to fire up the Statmotron here.
Woo!
Fire it back up. And we find in the era of...
It's solid state.
In the 12-10-8 era, so since 1975, the least dominant winner is still running scared. 43.85% of the possible points. Wow. However,
that sounds like something that won, but every other country was trying its best to not let it win.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong. My number one jumps a bit to 50.44% and is fourth from the bottom now, not second from the bottom. The new second from the bottom is, care to guess?
I think I saw what this is, so I'm not going to guess.
Second from the bottom, huh?
Yeah. This is aided a bit by the fact that there are a lot more points to potentially win or not win in the last few years.
Oh, jeez, is it toy?
It's arcade.
It's arcade. Oh!
Arcade, 45%. Toy is third from the bottom at 47%.
I see ya.
Then my number one, then Satellite, Danny. Then we've got Believe by Dima Bilan, 53%. And then 1944 by Jamala. So that one's also towards the bottom. Continues to really impress, though, is Amar Pelosh Deutsch, which, despite needing a lot more points to prove its point, so to speak, still managed 77% of the points it could have possibly had, which is
That's
still in the
incredible.
Top 10. The top is also different from what we reported previously. Mm-hmm. It is not Fairy Tale. Fairy Tale is not actually in the top 3.
What?
It falls to number 4. Here's the new top 3. Number 3 with 78.82% of the possible points it could have gotten is Love Shine a Light.
Sure.
Yep.
78.92%, just ahead of that, is the winner from 1982 when we were in Harrogate. That is Ein Bisschen Frieden.
Yep.
By Nicole.
Ralph Siegel's Finest Hour.
Oh, yeah.
And oh, one, yeah.
Number one, with 80% of the possible points, there were, let's see, 18 finalists, so 17 possible chances at 12 points, and managed a total of 164 points, which is 80.39%. It's Brotherhood of Man, Save Your Kisses for Me. They do number one.
All right. I do believe that I remembered that fact.
You
and I
did.
Thought I got I all right, so I feel slightly redeemed.
So. Yes.
My disturbingly Wikipedia-esque knowledge is
if we include every year, there's actually one even higher than that. This is going back to the early 70s when scoring was very weird. For about 3 years, every country got a score of 1 to 10 individually. So there were a ton of points given out, but you could only get so many of them.
It's ding-a-dong, isn't it? It's ding-a-dong.
It's not ding-a-dong.
Oh,
it is
early 70s, so it's not highly... Oh, okay.
By Anne-Marie from Luxembourg in 1973. Could have had a possible 170 points and got 129, which is 80.63%.
That's incredible.
So that is the biggest. If we include old ones, there are some scoring systems that made it impossible to get impressive percentages at all, meaning the worst winners were the four that tied in 1969.
Yes.
They got 12%. 12.
12.
Also towards the bottom with 15% of the possible points, Waterloo.
Oh.
Ooh.
Just because in those days, the scoring was like you just weren't gonna get that many points and you'd still win.
It was like the U.S. Senate. It was designed to be close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we are spending a lot of time discussing the Statmotron again this week because the Statmotron is pretty much almost at 100%. So we are going to put it through its paces tonight, mostly with a focus on that much debated topic of running order.
That's right. We have some data. I've crunched some numbers. I've had the Statmotron crunch some numbers.
Yeah, Eric hasn't just crunched this. I mean, the Statmotron has been like a work in progress for like 10 months now.
Mm-hmm. That's a labor of love for you.
Yeah. My hope was to have this ready for Eurovision 2020, which, I mean, it didn't not happen, but still working on adding individual scores from each country. I have that done through the entirety of the 50s and 60s now. So, but running order, I don't need individual scores for. We just need some of that. Yeah. So,
some of that sweet, sweet data.
That's right. So there are some anecdotal things about what is where you want to be and where you don't want to be in the running order. And so we're kind of wondering, does the data back that up?
Yeah, we're just seeing if these are anecdotal or if it's superstition or if there is actually some hard numbers to back up these sentiments.
So why don't we start by tackling one of the biggest myths, traditions, however you want to say it, is running from second place in the final as bad as people claim? Because like it's a curse by some stretches. I mean, I remember in 2011 when Dino Merlin pulled out his lot for the running order and watching his shoulders slump when he realized that he was drawing second.
Mm-hmm.
Was it all BS? Eric, what have you found?
That superstition, that reputation is 100% justified.
Oh, okay. All right, get into it. So how deep does it go? Is second usually like in the bottom five, or is it just that second has never broken through, say, the top five? Mm-hmm. What are we talking about?
So second has never produced a winner. It is one of only two regular spots that hasn't, the other being number 16. There has never been a winner.
That's pretty far down there.
There has also never been a winner from 26, I think 25, 26, 27, but those are numbers that haven't been around for very long.
Right, exactly.
So
it's a very small sample size.
Number two is also among
a choice family.
The regular spot, so the first 20 to 25 numbers, has the lowest average placement.
Of
any number, yeah. Average finishing spot in the number two is 13.56, so it averages on the right side of the table. It has produced only one second place finisher. It has produced only two third place finishers. So top three, three times in the history of the contest out of spot number two. It's bad. It's just really bad. Only average place that's lower is, interestingly, 26.
But again, it's a small sample size. So.
It is. I'm just noting it doesn't pay to go last right now. Coincidentally, in terms of fun with small sample sizes, the highest average finishing spot in the running order is 27, because it's only happened once and they finished third.
Who was that?
That would have been, so 2016, right?
2015.
No.
2015.
Oh,
who ran 2015? Third place. Is that A Million Voices?
Yes.
No, Il Volo.
Il Volo was last year.
That's right. Il Volo. So Il Volo are the undisputed worst act ever in the 27th. I will say I was kind of surprised to see this because I was running some similar numbers on semifinals as well and found that in terms of the number of songs, the longest semifinal is longer than the longest final. Yeah, in 2007, this was back when there was just a single semifinal, there was a 28-song semifinal. So that would have been in Helsinki.
In seven? Yeah, that would have been Helsinki.
Yeah, that's a lot. There was a song performing in slot 28, which has never happened in a final, but happened once in a semi.
And that's the reason why the following year, they decided to split things up into two semifinals.
That's a lot. Like, that's a lot. We were just talking about how by the time you get to song 26, people are just like, whatever.
And that was the first year that Monaco, well, not the first year that Monaco had declined to attend, but that Monaco was the only country that did not return from the previous year. So it could have, if Monaco had decided to show up, that could have been a 29 songer.
God.
Because they had four new countries debuting that year. Czech Republic, Georgia, and then the now independent Serbia and Montenegro. And then Austria and Hungary were showing up too. So by like, the way, they just kept piling on.
Song number 28 finished in fifth place. So it's a good spot to be in.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
100% qualification rate out of spot 28.
There you go.
So what is, let's give a sort of vibe. What are the past three songs from Eurovision that had the number two spot on the slate?
In the final?
Yes, in the final.
All right. So the last few years in spot number two, we have Kthehu Tokesh.
Yeah, Kthehu Tokesh, yeah.
Kthehu Tokesh, that's right.
From Albania. Mm-hmm. Tu Canción from Spain.
Oh.
Flashlight from Poland.
Flashlight?
I Stand from the Czech Republic. N'oublie pas from France. Cheesecake.
Oh.
We know how much we love cheesecake on this show.
Suddenly feeling lactose intolerant. So
since 2004, one song in the number two spot has finished in the top half. One.
In the top half?
Yes.
Wow. What was it and how did it do?
It finished in sixth place with 125 points.
Oh, okay.
Actually, it was Dino Merlin.
Hey, believe- hey. Wow. Small
boy, Dino. My boy.
Yeah. Kthehu Tokesh was 17th, and then we have a 23rd, 22nd, 25th, 25th. Cheesecake was 16th. 2013, Something from Lithuania, which is the name of the song, not just me like, I don't know, something.
Something in the way it sucks.
2012, it went to a song that I actually really like and feel was robbed, which was Sound of Our Hearts by
yeah, I
Compact
like
Disco.
Yeah.
We had Algo Pequeñito. From Spain. There Must Be Another Way from Israel. Spoilers, apparently there was not. Even If, Andy Abraham. That was a last placer.
It was.
Let's see. I Love You, Mi Vida was 20th. Loca from Moldova was 20th. Touch My Fire from 2005.
Touch My Fire.
22nd.
That one, right?
Du Bist from Austria, 21st. And then we get to...
Du bist me.
Then we go back to 2003. Vel der Mensch Zahit.
Oh God. Alf Poyer,
sixth place.
That song was a special melody.
But that's how far back we have to go to get two songs on the left side of the board. Year before that is Come Back by Jessica Garlick. That finished third. And then 2001, we have another last placer, Angel by Too Tricky from Iceland. And like, it's not good, you guys. Number two is indeed number two.
What slot after number two? Is there any slot that's equally as cursed?
16 is pretty rough.
16 is rough because sometimes that's... like, you know, just a couple songs after the intermission, after the interval. Mm-hmm.
That varies a lot. And I mean, for a long time, 16 was towards the end.
Sure.
Now it is not. But one way or another, slot 16 has never produced a winner. It is also averaged slightly below the halfway point on the table, 13.41 as an average place. Again, two is 13.56 by comparison. 16, however, has produced five runners up. And
that's
three,
pretty solid.
Three third places. So.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Like, as you get into, like, sort of the first half of the second half, I feel like that's kind of fertile territory for a lot of mm-hmm. winners. That's really not a bad place to be.
Yeah. Oh, and I didn't even mention this. The number two spot has also produced the most last place finishers.
I assumed that when you were talking about a lot of 24s and 25s. I'm like, well, that was really last that year.
It has happened nine times. Spot three is also not great. It has produced eight last places. Spot 13, if you're superstitious, you'll know that it has produced seven last placers, but has also produced three wins. Do you happen to know the spot that has produced the most wins?
Ooh.
I'm going to take a guess and say it's first half, definitely. I'm going to say eight.
I'm going to say
no.
18.
Derek, you're very close.
I was going to say 17.
Oh.
17 is correct. Oh. 17 has seven winners, as many as Ireland.
It might have the most winners, but is it is it statistically solid, though? Like, is it a feast or famine number?
Yes, it's average place. 17 and 12 and 11 are the only common running places with an average that averages into the top 10.
Wow. So 11 is the one that's pretty much adjacent to intermission.
I mean, that could depend on the show, really. Mm-hmm. That may depend year by year.
Yeah. In terms of average place, the best number you can get is 12. Average place there is 9.65.
Wow. Average in the top 10.
Yeah. 12 has produced 37 top 10 finishes. That's the second most. Spot 9 has 38. So somewhere in or around 9, 10, 11, 12 seems to be kind of the sweet spot. Those all average very, very well. And then, but 17 has produced 7 winners, which is kind of wild.
Well, take us on another trip into the past last like 5 or 6 years. What were the running orders of the winners?
Oh, sure. Just taking a quick look. Arcade 12, Toy was 22nd, Portugal was 11th, Amar Pelos Deutsch 11th, 1944 was 21. Then we had Heroes was 10, Rise Like a Phoenix was 11. So basically.
Wow, 10 and 11 over and over again.
Yeah. We had 10, 11, 10, 10 once, 11 twice, 12 once, 21 once, 22 once. So you want to be within between 0 and 2 more than a multiple of 10.
If a lot of times we in the press center get really excited when acts are drawn first half or second half after a semifinal in the press conference, the way that you're describing it, but over the last couple of years, especially since they've been doing producer-led running orders, you're not out of it if you are drawn first half. It's the game is certainly not over. I mean, it's a little bit tougher if you're like the first handful of songs, but you could still be, if you're drawn in the first half, it ain't over.
It seems like you want to be towards the end of a half, and that doesn't necessarily matter.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Which half it is. If we look at the songs that, you know, the runner-ups, where those ended up, 22, that's where Soldi was, 25, 25, 13, 25, 24.
Wow.
So, and that's going backwards from 2019 to 2014.
Wow.
So you want to be towards the end of a half is what it seems like. And maybe that's just, if you're a favorite, that's where they put you. Being towards the end of a half is a consequence of being a favorite as opposed to the other way around.
Wow.
That's hard to say.
How is going first? How is having number one?
I think there's only been one.
Not
winner?
Great. There has been one runner-up in that went first. There have been 3 winners out of the debuts, out of the opening spot.
And those were generally pretty early Eurovision songs, weren't they too?
Yep. Ding a Dong, Save Your Kisses for Me, and Diggy Loo Diggy Lay.
That's it.
I was also curious if there was much of a benefit or detriment to going last. This was a little bit trickier.
I would have said that it was sort of not cursed, but really meh.
Yeah.
But it sounds the opposite. It sounds like it's closer to being a big benefit.
There haven't been a ton of winners from the absolute last place. And a lot of the times, and granted, a lot of this may have just been a lot of British fans kind of wringing their hands after Molly Smitten Downs didn't really do as well as people were hoping with Children of the Universe, which was
she was great.
But a lot of my British friends were like, oh, it was song fatigue. By the end of that long, that long night in Copenhagen, everybody was exhausted. We were just ready for songs to end. And Molly just kind of got washed away, which is,
remember Lavenda?
That had other issues.
That's very sad because Lavenda absolutely slapped as a song, and I still can't account for how it did so poorly.
I can. Giant Billy Bookcase and the Wicker
Man? It was
Man?
The Billy Bookcase. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was this. It's weird that we can tell. We did a whole show on staging, but it seems weird that staging was what killed the energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think going last didn't really help either. The song that went on last has finished in last place only twice. However, the last spot has produced 6 winners. More than I would have thought.
Yeah.
It has not happened since Rock Me in 1989, which was Yugoslavia's only win. France in 1960, Ireland in 1970, all kinds of everything there. L'Oiseau et l'Enfant from France in 1977.
Mm.
The previously mentioned Ein Bisschen Frieden.
Bisschen
Frieden. I don't speak German.
Du bist.
Yeah, du bist. Yeah. that went last in 1982 and won. Si la vie est sado by Corinne Hermes in 1983 also went last and won, and then Rock Me. So 6 times the last song has been the one that took it.
But not since the late 80s. That kind of surprises me.
Yeah. Now you may be wondering.
Yes.
On the topic of going second, does the awfulness extend to semifinals?
Does it?
I am happy to tell you.
It does.
That the answer is absolutely yes.
What is it? What is it that makes... Is it that people forget number two? Like, is it so easy to forget? Or is this a willful sort of system that, that the EBU uses?
Well, I mean, they've only been doing producer-led running orders since 2013.
That's true, but even so, can we account for randomization before that?
Possibly.
Maybe. It has produced zero winners. Again, no winners in the number two spot. I will say semifinal winners are a lot more evenly distributed. There is no spot that has won more than three times.
You mean so, won the semifinal or gone on to win?
Won a semifinal.
Okay.
But if you had to guess, how many top five finishes has the number two spot produced in semifinals?
Well, if you're saying it's equally bad.
I will note that there have been 28 semifinals.
28 semifinals. Yeah. How many have finished in the top five? I'm going to venture a guess and go with an old quiz bowl guess. One.
I
was going to say five.
I'd say two.
It's Danny's right. It's one.
It's one. Oh. There we go.
Only one.
Do tell. What is it?
It was fifth place.
What was it?
The only top five finisher from spot two in any semifinal ever. It's 2008, Boaz Mahuda's The Fire in Your Eyes from Israel. That's it. It's the only one. The number two spot has produced 11 qualifiers in 28 opportunities. That's not the fewest. The number three spot has produced 8, which is pretty rough. But yeah, less than 40% qualification rate out of the number two spot. Of spots that have been in every semifinal, the best spot you could potentially want to be in is 14, 75% of the time you get through. 18 has not come up as often, only 19 times there have been at least 18 countries. But the song in spot 18 qualifies 84% of the time.
It's essentially.
It's an incredibly good spot to be in. Last or close to last. Sometimes there's only 17, other times there's 19.
Unless we're talking about some of those crazy long 28-song semifinals like what we had in 2007.
Yeah, yeah. The early semifinals all had way more.
Yeah, those were weird.
But yeah, 13, 14, 15 are all very, very good. If you're in a semifinal. Meanwhile, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 all have qualification rates of 50% or less. So
good to know.
If you're in a semi, apparently you want to go, it's a bit preferable to go late, or at least not in the first five. But yeah, 2 is just bad. 2 is bad no matter how you look at it. And I was curious, we do know the running orders for what the running orders would have been for the semifinals in 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
To see, who wasn't qualifying? And here's the answer. David Na in semifinal one was second. That was a tough semifinal. I think they might have had a shot, right?
It would have taken some good staging. I personally love the song, but I could have seen it was very, very under the radar for a lot of folks.
In semi two, know who it was?
Who was it?
Uku Suviste.
Hey! Uku with the deuce.
In number two with my jean jacket performance.
Almost deliberate.
Yeah.
I'm almost wondering, like, nowadays that it is all producer-led, I mean, can delegations say this as an insult now? Like, I feel like we should get...
We can't have been the first people to actually compile these stats.
I don't know.
I don't know everybody in the Eurovision sphere. Yeah, it may seem like it's
I didn't look, because if I'd found out somebody else had, I wouldn't have done it.
People know about the second being a bad place. I know when Spain was second in 2018, everyone said, oh, somebody hates Spain.
Yeah, but is that actually because of numbers, or is it because of this tradition and this perception of the second spot being awful? Mm-hmm. Is it just people looking at it and saying, oh, it's never won, and leaving it at that? Or have people really kind of dug into these numbers?
For producer-led, if you think about how they're structuring the contest, they're going to put a big, exciting song first, and then follow that with something a little bit more low-key. And I think that really hurts it going that early, getting overshadowed straight away. If it's totally random, I can't explain it.
Yeah, it's wild. Looking at recent semifinals, the last song to perform in the number two spot in a semi to qualify is Running on Air in 2017.
Wow, that's a while.
Yep. Last year, we had in the two semis 22 by Sarah McTiernan and Heaven by D-Moll.
Well, Ireland was, they were called 22, so they were really tripling down on it in 22 mm-hmm. in the second spot. Like that was, that was just fate.
Yeah, yeah. Their score didn't even reach 22.
It's like 17, wasn't it?
Yep, 17 points.
Oh, yeah, well, no.
Yeah, 17 points. Wasn't a bad song.
No, it was cute.
I thought it was bad. 2018, we had Our Choice from Iceland.
Which did last.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. The other semifinal was Goodbye by The Humans, which came very close. It finished 11th and was in the top 10 in the jury vote, and the public sank it.
Really?
Yeah.
Romania. Oh, Diaspora mm-hmm. not showing up.
Nope. Yeah. Keep the Faith from Georgia in 2017 was the other one that did not qualify. Hmm. We had one qualifier in 2016, which was Color of Your Life, Mikhail Shpak, but Utopian Land did not make it. Face the Shadow by Armenia made it in 2015, but Playing with Numbers by Arlie Sterling did not.
I will maintain that song was robbed. It is an understated little bit of piano beauty.
That was a great song.
Yeah.
And 2014 had two songs that are among the favorites of this group in the number two spots, and neither of them got through.
2014. I loved Same Heart that year, but I don't think that was second.
It was.
It was. And Amazing by Tanya, maybe?
No. Cake to Bake.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Good riddance.
Hey. Still love that song.
I was talking about Same Heart.
Oh,
hey, also,
I couldn't believe that didn't get through. I still listen to that song pretty often. Only managed 19 points in its semifinal,
second to last. Yeah,
yeah,
Eric. Yes. Before we wind things up here, I want you to do something for me and tell me what is the most boring placement in the running order.
Define boring.
Tell me who, give me the number that averages. Like rank 19. Like who's the not? Don't give me number two because I don't want to lose. But just give me the one that'll make me disappear into the forgotten also rans of Eurovision lore.
Hmm. Okay. I think I've got one for you here.
What's the most boring placement number?
I'm going to say the most boring placement among commonly used numbers. So like not 26 or 27.
Yeah.
Is going to be.
It's like five. Oh, yeah. It's five. Wow.
Five has produced two winners and three second places and three third places. Mm-hmm. In general, it has also produced four last place finishes. In general, it produces a top 10 about half the time. Hmm. A little bit less than half the time.
Okay.
And
honestly, it sounds not too bad.
Average,
is boring.
Yes. Average place is 11.84, which is The top of the bell curve is at around 11.5 in terms of average place, because that's close to the average number of finalists over the course of the years. Some notable recent songs from place five, you may be wondering.
Oh no. Am I remembering correctly? Is this where Czech Republic was?
No.
Friend of a Friend in number five? Okay.
No.
Like third, wasn't there?
I think Friend of a Friend was third, yeah. But recent performers in what we've determined to be the boring spot, number five. I will note that I did not look at this list until I said it was boring. Here's what we got. Scream by Sergei Lazarev.
Sure.
Nobody But You.
Wow. keep going.
All right,
so. Fly With Me by Artsvik.
Okay.
Pioneer by Freddie.
Mm. Sorry, what?
Still In Love With You by Electro Velvet.
Hey.
Silent Storm by Carl Espen.
Oh.
One of the only very good finishers out of the number three spot in a semifinal, by the way. In 2013, it was Conquista Hasta Al Final by ESDM from Spain. Bosnia and Herzegovina by Maya Sar. In 2011, it was What About My Dreams by
Caddy Wolf.
Life Looks Better in Spring, which is boring even by the name. I don't know. Does this seem like a boring spot?
You got some high points in there with those third placers, but a couple.
I was going to say, you're right that like you're right that it sometimes does give us some second placers and some third placers, but otherwise, yeah,
it's a number.
Kind of barren. You know, it is a number.
It's a number. Yeah. The winners out of the five spot, by the way, again, there's just two. We have In Beetje from the Netherlands, 1959.
Teddy Scholten,
and,
yeah.
Nocturne by Secret Garden was also fifth. I feel like Richard Osman. I just have all this stuff. And then people say things and then I talk about them.
You're not nearly tall enough, man. Okay. Like, you'll have to have Danny stand on top of your shoulders and then maybe you'll reach.
Can you do your best, Nate Silver impression? Like,
Yeah. Hillary's definitely going to win.
And on that note, everybody, you can hit us up.
She's in the number two slot, which... Yeah.
And on that note, you could reach us and yell at us on our various social media accounts on Facebook and Twitter. You could reach us at 12pointsUSA. Email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. You could reach me directly at ESC Insider. Eric is at Eric is tweeting. It's E-R-I-K is tweeting. And yes, he is.
I am.
Yeah. Hit us up on any of those. Check out our Redbubble. Maybe we'll be able to buy a coffee with some stuff eventually. Guys, this has been another little slice of heaven.
This is fun. Yeah.
You have
always
proven.
Love chatting with you guys.
Likewise.
Well, we really have to, you know, put Statmotron inside of a safe now or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting
like
too powerful.
The formula of Coke for Coca-Cola at the Coke Museum. It's behind a vault. They say it's behind a vault. I asked them, is it really back there? And they said, yeah. And I was like, okay, yeah, but is it really back there? And they were like, yes, it is. And I was like, no, it's not. And then I left.
I think it's in the same binder somewhere where they keep the recipe for the Colonel's 11 herbs and spices.
Yeah.
The recipe for where Jimmy Hoffa is.
Oh, wait. Yeah. No, that's just Giant
the
Stadium.
Recipe for the witch's brew that'll let you scry where Jimmy Hoffa is. Okay.
Shall we just leave it there, guys?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. Yeah.
Weird.
So, yeah.
This is getting weird.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We really do appreciate it. Feel free to subscribe to us on whatever podcasting channel you are listening to us on, if you're not already. If you are, thank you. Feel free to give us any sort of review, stars, as to your heart's delight. We would love to hear any feedback. But until next time, guys, I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I've been Danny.
And America.
Stop listening
now.
What?
What?
The NDA was with Guy Fieri, by the way. To not, yeah.